Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Megan Kamrick, KUNM News Director. We hear a lot about drugs like opioids, fentanyl, and meth in New Mexico, but another substance is involved in more deaths than all of those drugs combined, alcohol. It kills New Mexicans at a higher rate than people anywhere else in the country, but laws taxing or limiting alcohol have been tough to pass. Today on Let's Talk New Mexico, we'll discuss a new multi-part series, Blind Drunk, by New Mexico In Depth, that explores the toll alcohol is taking on our citizens. You can find links to those stories at our website, KUNM.org. Many may assume the high mortality rates related to alcohol are due to drunken driving, but as reporter Ted Alcorn found in reporting this series for New Mexico In Depth, the state has tackled intoxicated driving, but not necessarily the broader harms brought on by alcohol. In 2010, the CDC estimated that drinking imposed $2.2 billion in costs on the state. That's nearly $3 billion in today's dollars, a higher cost per drink than any other state. Broader harms include alcohol's role in our high rates of violence and trauma. And while many blame drunks or alcoholics for our dismal statistics, alcohol use disorder has a spectrum of behaviors that affect many people in the state differently. Ted Alcorn is here this morning, as well as experts in public health and addiction. And we also want to hear from you. Have you or a loved one struggled with alcohol use? What was it like finding help? What changes do you think need to happen in New Mexico to address alcohol abuse? You can email us at letstalk@kunm.org. Call us at 505-277-5866 and tweet to us using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Ted Alcorn, welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. Your first story in this series at New Mexico In Depth is called Hiding in Plain Sight. What does that mean in regards to alcohol here?
Well, I think if I told you something preventable was killing about 2,000 New Mexicans a year, that it killed more people here than it does in our neighboring states, and that it killed more people here than it did 20 years ago, you know, that would be a scandal. You'd want to know about it. But that's the case with alcohol. And I think we've grown to accept its costs and its consequences and kind of turned a blind eye to it.
And you got, what got you interested in doing this series?
Well, I'm kind of a data wonky person, and it really started with just a single data point where I saw that New Mexico's rates of alcohol-related death are not just higher than any other state, they're way higher. They're higher than states that are poorer, higher than states where people drink more, and it's not entirely clear why. Even the experts that I spoke with could name a lot of the factors that contribute, but it's a little bit of a mystery. So as I started to try and unravel it and started talking with a wider and wider spectrum of people, I got more and more interested in what really started as, you know, just a single article grew into what ended up being this seven-part series.
And you grew up here in Albuquerque, and then you left to go to college.
Yeah, I was raised here in the 90s, so I'm very aware of, the state's legacy of addressing drunk driving. I was a teenager coming of age when we were really focused on that as a state. And I think like many people, I came to think of alcohol's impact on the state primarily as safety on roadways. But what's been interesting to learn through this investigation is, particularly as the other consequences of alcohol use have grown, particularly chronic illness that accompanies alcohol use, DWI has become a smaller and smaller fraction of alcohol's impact on the state. Now about 1 in 10 alcohol-related deaths is DWI. The other 90% have nothing to do with the roads.
Wow. What are some of the myths? You just tagged one of them, but what are some of the myths we have about alcohol abuse that you want to debunk in this series?
Well, we go through in each article a sort of a different set of blind spots, and there's a lot of them. I think one, of course, is this preoccupation with road safety and not with thinking about addiction and drinking more broadly. I think a lot of the other myths that have to do with alcohol use sometimes stem from stigma around it. So we certainly tend to think of there being as irresponsible, dangerous drinking, and then what everybody else does, what you and I do.
Right.
And that turns out to be not the case. Science has already really discarded that notion of there being good drinkers and bad drinkers. And in fact, like you said in the intro, there's a spectrum of drinking behaviors. And in fact, about one in four New Mexicans who drinks meets criteria for what we call an alcohol use disorder, drinking to a level that they have trouble controlling. And that means that there's just a lot more of attention that needs to be given to how we can all adopt more responsible drinking behaviors. Another one of the important myths that we talk about is who we blame for the state's high rates of alcohol-related deaths. There's a history of assuming that this has to do with the Native American population. There's a whole false mythology about Native Americans having a predisposition to alcohol disorder or severe disease, which again, there turns out to be no evidence for, and people have pushed against this for decades. But I think it allows a lot of us to think that we're off the hook. There are big racial disparities in New Mexico for sure, but they're not necessarily for the reasons that we think.
What don't we understand about alcohol and addiction here, and how is that hampering our efforts to address the issue? You just touched on some of them.
Well, I think one of the important things that we also fail to recognize is that the drinking environment that we live in does influence rates of harm. We have this tendency, I think, to think of alcohol, excessive alcohol use as a personal problem, maybe even as a personal failing, without recognizing that the shared environment, including the policies that we have created as a society, affect the population levels of drinking and excess drinking. And every expert I talked to who said, if the state wants to get this under control, we have to adopt better policies related to the sale and consumption of alcohol. And the centerpiece that people spoke about is how we tax alcohol. The price of alcohol is actually a pretty important factor in how much people drink of it. And in New Mexico, the alcohol tax rate has fallen due to inflation to its lowest rate in 30 years. So one of the most important policy tools for we have for affecting this grave problem, we've entirely ignored nearly my entire life.
Do you mean the rate has stayed the same, or it has gone down, the actual tax rate?
But you have to understand that alcohol taxes are set according to the volume of the beverage that is sold, not to the price. So as prices of alcohol rise, say as the price of a Budweiser, you know, a six-pack rises from $6 maybe 20 years ago to $10, $11 now, the alcohol taxes on it are unchanged. So that means every year, alcohol effectively gets a tax reduction. They get a tax cut. And because legislators have not adjusted our alcohol tax rates since the early 1990s, that means alcohol taxes have fallen as a proportion of the revenue, basically. And they're very small anyway. We're talking about a couple of cents a drink. Yeah, but even a marginal increase in the tax rate, the experts tell me, would have a pretty important impact not only on drunk driving. There's research to show it reduces cirrhosis deaths in the long term, even risky sexual behavior. So there's a lot of range of impacts that can do, and all you have to do is change a number in the tax code.
We're all familiar with tragic stories of people killed by drunken drivers, but you found that most New Mexicans killed by alcohol died of chronic illnesses in emergency rooms and intensive care units. So are these illnesses brought on by alcohol? Are they exacerbated by alcohol or both?
Well, alcohol has a complex impact on the entire body. And drinking at a responsible level, I guess I would say, there's clearly, the science is increasingly clear, there's no benefits to drinking, but drinking one drink a day for women, two drinks a day for men is kind of what doctors say is a safe level. But drinking more than that with every extra drink has a larger impact on your whole body. And, I'm a drinker, so none of this is about necessarily eliminating alcohol from our society. But when you see folks who are exposed to a lot of alcohol, it can have really grave impacts. I spoke to the medical director of the UNM intensive care unit, and he said, about 10 to 20% of their beds are occupied by somebody who's there because of alcohol disorder, because of excessive drinking. And the end stages of chronic disease with alcohol are really terrible. And those are deaths that we don't really talk about. I think in the series I highlight, there's some chronic illnesses that we champion as a society. We champion research for certain cancers, for ALS, because there's not a stigma around them, and people who are exposed to them and their families are willing to come out and talk about it. But people don't really talk about family members that have been affected or impacted by alcohol. I know in my family, that's the case. So, you know, part of this is about starting, opening up more conversation about what is ultimately, you know, this is a health issue.
And are the deaths that you're talking about, are they recorded as alcohol related?
Well, yeah, it's alcohol. Some deaths that are due to alcohol are really clearly so. There's certain impacts on the liver that are very clearly consequences of alcohol use. So about 1,000 of the deaths in New Mexico that we see each year that are attributable to alcohol are definitely so. But there's a lot of deaths that are attributable to alcohol but are not so clearly linked. For example, 40% of homicides in New Mexico involve a victim who was drinking at the time. 30% of suicides in New Mexico involve a person who's drinking. That's a huge, huge share. It's a more common intoxicant in violence in the state than any other, including fentanyl, methamphetamines, et cetera. And so those deaths, one wouldn't typically put in sort of the alcohol bucket, but the epidemiologists, you know, apply a fraction, a proportion to those deaths and say, you know, a certain share of these are attributable to alcohol. Same with certain types of cancers that alcohol puts you at a higher risk for, such as breast cancer. You know, a small share of those deaths that occur in New Mexico, we attribute to alcohol too. So when you add up all of these, you know, estimates, that's how you get to the total impact of alcohol in the state.
One thing you make clear is that we can't just attribute our dismal numbers on this to so-called inveterate drunks. Rather, alcohol use disorder, it's a spectrum. Many people fall on different places on that spectrum. So how do these persistent myths and stigma maybe stop people from getting help or even realizing they may need help?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the end, what's important is the impacts, right? And anything that allows a lot of New Mexicans who perhaps struggle a little bit with drinking to say, I'm not in that bucket, I don't have that problem, is an obstacle then for people getting helpful treatment, perhaps medications that are FDA approved to help address the cravings that could really help improve their lives. I also found in my reporting that it's a real obstacle to the medical community because I met and profile one patient in the series whose name is Steve, who alcohol had a huge toll on his life. He was really struggling with it for decades. It really destroyed his family, his marriage, and, you know, estranged him from his kids. And it was only, you know, towards the very end when he was able to get treatment that he needed because for many years his doctor, frankly, didn't recognize the symptoms, didn't talked with him about drinking, but never counseled him on reducing his consumption. In fact, even as Steve recalled it, told him, you're not an alcoholic. And I think that shows, and, you know, clinicians perhaps can explain this in a little more detail, but that we need to, you know, clinicians need to accept that every patient who comes in is an opportunity for them to counsel a little bit about the impacts of heavy drinking and about ways to reduce their consumption.
You also dive into attempts at passing laws or making policy to address these alcohol issues. What are the big stumbling blocks?
Well, as one legislator told it to me, it's not like there's no one who's opposing these kind of measures, right? Alcohol is a big business. The nears we can tell when we look at the tax receipts, frankly, are the best way to measure how much alcohol gets consumed in the state. And by those estimates, about $1 billion of alcohol gets sold in this state each year. That's enough, as we calculated, to fill 72 Olympic swimming pools. And that money flows through all the thousands of businesses in the state that are licensed to sell alcohol, and it's a diverse group. It's not just bars and liquor stores. It's also restaurants, state parks, ski areas, grocery stores, gas stations. That's a diverse constituency, and it's a lot of money. And so those folks, I think, are rightly protective of their business and are fairly well organized. And the legislature, which is constantly surrounded by restaurateurs and bar owners because a lot of the legislation in the session here gets done in that environment. You know, they pal up their friends with alcohol licensees. And one of them told me, you know, when you got to take a vote and you're voting against somebody you know, that's a tough vote. And so I think the political calculus is really stacked against this issue. And we've seen it in the legislature again and again as they've either failed to take up or failed to move forward any legislation really to address the broad harms of alcohol.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick. We're talking about the New Mexico In-Depth series called Blind Drunk, about the impact of alcohol in New Mexico. We want to hear from you. You can call us at 505-277-5866. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Megan Kamrick. We're talking about the impact of alcohol in the state of New Mexico. Have you or someone you know struggled with alcohol? Was it difficult to get the help you needed? Call us at 505-277-9866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. I'm here with reporter Ted Alcorn, who reported a multi-part series on the impact of alcohol for New Mexico in depth. Find a link at kunm.org. Also joining us this morning is Larissa Lindsay. She's Director of Clinical Services with the Addiction and Substance Abuse Program at the University of New Mexico. Larissa, thanks for being here. First, I wanted to ask you how the thinking on addiction and alcohol has shifted or maybe is shifting. Clinicians like you are using the term alcohol use disorder rather than alcoholic, correct? Why is that?
Yes, Megan, thank you for having me. I think this is a wonderful discussion to have, and I really appreciate you bringing up that question because I think one of the things that very much contributes to some of the issues around alcohol use in our state has to do with stigma of this condition. I think Ted mentioned that earlier. So I think the language that we use has a lot of power. So it's important for people to really start to view this as a disorder or an illness. It's no different than any other chronic illness like like diabetes. Where we know there is a confluence of lifestyle and personal choice, but also a lot of influence of environmental things that are outside of an individual's control, their genetics. Any addictive condition has about a 50% genetic influence, which is greater than a lot of other conditions that that we consider to be primarily outside of someone's control. So I think it's very important that we use the appropriate labels, and things like alcoholic or addict convey that defines the person, that it's who they are, versus an individual with alcohol use disorder. This is somebody who has an illness that can be treated. And so I think it is very important to try to encourage people to shift their language around how we label this condition.
Larissa, lots of us drink. Ted says he drinks, I drink. How much alcohol is too much?
So there are recommended guidelines, and I think Ted mentioned that earlier. It's about one drink a day for women, seven drinks per week, and then two drinks a day, 14 a week for men. And the reason is because men and women metabolize alcohol differently. They have different responses to alcohol, so it's important to kind of follow that guideline. I think it's also important to pay attention to what is considered a drink. So understanding what is a standard drink unit and also the percent of alcohol that you're drinking. On the clinical side, when we're trying to assess if someone's falling into a risky drinking pattern, we don't just ask for if they're drinking beer. We ask for what type of beer and do they know the percent of alcohol and the size, because it really is highly variable. So it's important for people to kind of empower themselves to understand how to measure alcohol.
And can you give us an idea of how alcohol kills New Mexicans at a higher rate than anywhere in the country? These are mostly people, as we said with Ted, dying in hospitals and ICUs. What is happening to people physically and mentally who struggle with alcohol use disorder?
So there's a whole range of things that can occur for individuals, both psychological, in their interpersonal world, into their physical body. So I think Ted mentioned a number of the conditions that are associated with the physical impact. Obviously, we know the liver is the most vulnerable organ for developing diseases like cirrhosis. But we also know that physically ongoing alcohol use, because it's a poison, can really wear any organ system down. And so we see higher correlations with all types of different cancers, GI issues, or that can become sometimes life-threatening. We also see issues related to cardiac health. So there's a number of diseases that may not be, like you're saying, on the death report directly connected, but yet they are very much connected to ongoing problematic alcohol use. From a psychological perspective, we know that there's a number of consequences related to problematic drinking, especially once it becomes a true disorder, that can erode social supports, their work stability, their home stability, and those types of things just add all kinds of stress to the system. And so if you're already dealing with a lot of stress, maybe you already have a tendency for something like depression or anxiety, alcohol is just going to exacerbate those conditions. And so sometimes we see people that had lower levels of a psychiatric or mental health condition. Those become highly problematic once drinking becomes a problem. Or we see that drinking becomes a problem and then these mental health conditions appear. And so we can't forget the impact that heavy drinking has on increasing a person's suicidal thinking or even suicidal behaviors. So we always want to be aware that there's a heavy psychological component to ongoing drinking as well.
I wanted to point out part of your series, Ted, is an article about the impact on your health and like how much is too much, right? So we do have a link to that on this show post at KUNM.org. And Larissa, your program cares for about 800 patients at a time. And in the stories in the New Mexico In Depth series, you noted that people's addictions are often rooted in childhood traumas. Can you talk more about that and how this plays out in New Mexico? We have very high rates of what we call adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs.
Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, our state has routinely been listed as number one in the country for childhood adverse events, traumatic events fall into that category. But it also includes things like severe neglect, chronic homelessness, things that will hugely disrupt a child's development. Now, there's a lot of research that supports when those types of things happen in childhood, and especially if more than one of those types of events occur, it will disrupt how somebody's brain is developing. And how somebody's brain develops impacts how they learn to socialize, how successful they are in school, in being able to obtain gainful employment. And so, of course, problematic substance use or engagement in other high-risk behaviors is a downstream effect to that. And then that can cross and carry over generationally. So once it impacts one individual, then it can go on to impact their children, their grandchildren, and so forth. So we can't underscore how important those early childhood traumas are. And here in New Mexico, I think the last data that I looked at, we're at about 18% of our children experience multiple ACEs. And that's compared to about 11% for the national average. So we're nearly double what the rest of the country experiences.
So I'm guessing the dearth of our mental health services here means, as you mentioned, people could self-medicate with alcohol. That's one of the issues here.
Absolutely. So symptoms of disorders related to trauma exposure are really uncomfortable. They can be very difficult for people to manage, especially ongoing, sort of like a chronic stress presentation. So lots of anxiety, where they may avoid things in their life. And if that happens long term, your world gets very, very small. And so you can imagine that creates a lot of psychological distress. And anything that's going to help to eliminate that distress, even short term, even temporary, such as alcohol, people will gravitate towards. And if you do that long enough, you will eventually end up with a disorder.
We are talking about alcohol and its impact on New Mexico. I gave out the wrong number on our last break. I apologize. Do you have questions about alcohol and your health? You can call us at 505-277-5866. You can also tweet to us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. I want to take a call from Alexis in Santa Fe. Hi, Alexis. What did you want to ask or what did you want to talk about?
Well, I wanted to sort of comment that I think this series is terrific, both to bring it to the radio and as well what I've read in the newspaper. I haven't caught all the pieces of this, but I think this is excellent reporting for New Mexico, and I think done in a tone that is actually helpful so that people might read it and take something away. I think the comments that I sort of seize on are two basic buckets of comments. The law needs to catch up to this, meaning legislation and then implementation. So the notion that taxes raised on a finite, quantity of alcohol should be raised, that idea is long overdue. And as you note, it's since the 90s. Yes, tax heavily. And yes, go into the legislature and don't be afraid to look your friend in the eye and do them a favor by raising the taxes. That's going to help New Mexico. And I think this series and other data show that. So let's raise the taxes, diminish the volume, and create, I think the numbers that were said are 7 or 8% reduction in negative outcomes.
Okay.
The other thing to mention is that when people drink alcohol, they I think it was mentioned this morning in the parts I heard and in other places. I've looked at this part of it with doctors, lawyers, and others for decades. And one of the things I would comment here is the alcohol, as the speaker is saying, gets people into a physical medical fix in many ways. And it's not just one group versus another or any of that. It's basically people who drink, some with some predispositions perhaps, are encountering a sugar process that's toxic. And so one of the things to focus on would be something called acetaldehyde, an enzyme. I'm only raising it to say that if you start tracking that, you'll track how some of the disease process exposures and risks work.
Okay. I want to throw that. Thanks a lot for calling, Alexis. Did you want to comment on anything about that, Larissa? Is sugar part of this process that makes alcohol problematic?
So I wouldn't be the right type of doctor to comment on that. I'm not a medical.
I'm sorry. That's right. You're a psychologist. I wanted to just finish our thought that we had started, Larissa, about ACEs and alcohol use. This seems like a cycle that's feeding each other. If someone has a number of adverse childhood experiences, possibly due to addiction in the household, they're growing up with more risks. They might self-medicate and repeat the cycle over and over.
Absolutely. And the data is very clear on that children that are exposed to problematic alcohol use or really any form of addictive behavior in the household during their development are at much greater risk to develop those same problems themselves once they become an adult. The other thing is any of these experiences have an epigenetic component, so that can also increase an individual's risk for a number of other psychiatric conditions that can be very, very disruptive to their life downstream. And we know that we see high rates of comorbidity in our state, meaning that people typically don't just have an addiction like alcohol use disorder or a mental health condition like major depression, bipolar, schizophrenia. Oftentimes they will have both or multiple conditions, and that just increases the complexity, the need for treatment, and the likelihood that individual is not going to be stable over the course of their life. So it gets really, really sticky really quickly.
We have another caller, Don from Albuquerque. Don, thanks for calling Let's Talk New Mexico. What did you want to add to the conversation?
Booze has devastated the lives, killed many of my dear friends. A worldwide study in 195 nations released results in 2018, their conclusion, there is no safe level of drinking booze. I drink no booze, not one damn drop, haven't for many years. Under normal conditions, I would not drink any booze for $10,000 on the spot, and I am serious. I urge all community leaders, all politicians, all musicians, all athletes to drink no booze and to say this publicly many times. Our example can influence people who know us.
Thank you so much for calling, Don. We have an email from a listener who says, I'm an alcoholic. I've been struggling for years, recently relapsed, haven't been able to quit because of a lack of support and the stigma surrounding alcoholism. First, on Medicaid, I am facing a 3+ month wait. And second, when the time comes, it takes 2 weeks off to go to detox responsibly. With medical supervision that could save my life, then my friends, family, and employer will find out. My wife and I are already separated. She threatened to leave with my son if she finds out I relapsed, and my job will fire me if they find out I've been working like this. So what am I supposed to do? I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place. We need more and better options. I want to turn to our next guest, Rachel Morgan. She's a clinician with Four Corners Detoxification and Treatment Center in Gallup. Rachel, is this a common story? Our listener is relating. People cannot find help. There's stigma. The problems getting into detox programs.
Hi, good morning. I'm Rachel Morgan. Thanks for having me on the show. I really do relate to that email. I feel like that's a pretty common struggle that people have when they're coming into detox or residential services. I do know that there are some issues with insurances, with transportation, employment support, and then just the stigma. A lot of the clients that we've had are very worried about sharing with their employer that they do, that they're coming to rehab for alcoholism or drug use. So sometimes we have to tread lightly around that topic and give clients autonomy about, you know, how much they want to share with their employers.
And Larissa, is there an outpatient program that you have in Albuquerque? What are options for folks like this?
Clinic called ASAP, which is our Addictions and Substance Abuse program. So it does have an outpatient detox component where we will help people detox safely as long as they don't need medically managed detoxification. But we work with other medically managed facilities in Bernalillo County if that's needed. I do think that the caller or the person who sent the email is correct in that it can be very challenging to navigate our system. We don't have as many facilities that have trained substance use disorder specialists. So I think another thing as a community, if we could really work to advocate for more training for our providers, for really primary care providers, to be willing to at least be kind of the first stop for people that are struggling with this issue, to provide them some assistance with navigating that system, with determining which program would be the best fit for them and when, because alcohol can be quite dangerous to detox from independently. So we really want to be providing as much education for people as possible to make sure that they get to the right level of care.
You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick. Stay right there. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We're taking your calls about the impact of alcohol in New Mexico and changes you think we need to make in the state. You can call 505-277-5866 to talk to our panel. I want to turn back to Rachel Morgan with Four Corners Detoxification and Treatment Center in Gallup. Rachel, we've heard Larissa and Ted talk about the role of trauma in alcohol addiction. How is Four Corners incorporating that reality into your treatment?
I believe that Four Corners has been really progressive about implementing a lot of trauma-informed care. We do serve a lot of clients from the justice system, from different communities where there is a lot of adverse issues. We work with a majority of Native American clients. We do have a lot of diversity in how we approach the different aspects of recovery. So sort of backing off or piggybacking off of what Larissa had said, you know, addressing a lot of those risk factors, we look at it holistically. And so we try to identify the individualistic needs of clients, and we approach each client differently. And mm-hmm. so the more variety in services we have, the more able we are to help people heal.
So you might have traditional Western treatments, but then you also might have things like sweat lodges or traditional indigenous medicine.
Yeah, our programs are client-informed. So we sort of take a bottom-up approach. We look at the needs of the clients, and we consider building programs around that. So we have different groups and different support services. And right now, because we serve a majority of Native American clients, we do implement the sweat lodge, the talking circle. We do sage. We do blessings. We take hikes. We do meditative classes. So, yeah, we try to implement more of the Native American style services.
Rachel, what was your experience growing up on the Navajo Nation in terms of alcohol and how people did or didn't use it? And how do you see your generation and the people you practice with at Four Corners trying to change some of these dynamics?
You know, the topic of alcoholism is very personal to me. I think it just kind of speaks to a lot of people, actually, but it... I grew up in very deeply alcoholic homes. My extended family, a lot of my uncles have passed away from alcoholism or secondary issues to alcoholism. I have also struggled with alcoholism myself personally. I lost a couple of siblings in alcohol-related deaths. And so, yeah, it's really affected my life on a personal level. And so the career that I took upon, you know, the career that I walked into was really a service to the community I grew up in. So I work on a lot of recovery in my community because I know that alcoholism has really affected the Navajo Nation.
What are the larger systemic challenges in your community to people getting help?
I think, well, with the Navajo Nation, there's a lot of issues with transportation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty big area, and so a lot of the communities are pretty far apart. It's a very impoverished community. Some of the basic needs are not being met in family households, like, you know, electricity, water, transportation, food. And so a lot of the basic needs, survival needs of families are not being met. So things like alcoholism and, you know, medical care, those are kind of left by the wayside. So, yeah.
Yes, Ted.
Yeah, and I just wanted to make mention of one thing, because obviously, as Rochelle is talking about, the when we talk about the impact that alcohol has on Native communities in the state, I did find in my reporting, obviously, a lot of hope in seeing the work of people like Rochelle and across Gallup, who are frankly at the forefront of addressing this issue probably more openly and more assertively than almost any other community in the state. But I think sometimes when we put alcohol and Native people under a microscope, mm-hmm. It becomes their problem. It becomes something that this community has to deal with and the rest of us can kind of turn away from. And so I think it's also important to really step back and recognize, you know, the unequal treatment of Native people in this state that is historical and ongoing is a collective issue and is a collective problem. So we can't turn our back on it. And then the disparities are super grave. The data show that alcohol, you know, has a much higher impact on the Native community in New Mexico than any other demographic group. But whites, Anglos and Hispanics in the state have alcohol-related disease and death at much higher rates than their peers in other states. And even if you took the native population out of New Mexico, we would still have the highest rate of alcohol-related deaths in the country. So again, just want to emphasize that this really is, you know, a statewide problem, even though there are also great disparities within it.
What? Thank you for that, Ted. What, Rachel, what you... what you're talking about, I think, brings into greater focus that this isn't just an isolated issue. It's a symptom of much larger trauma, disparity, and poverty, and you can't really address it without addressing these other issues, the same issues that Larissa touched on with adverse childhood experiences. So it sounds like you're trying to do that in your own way in the Four Corners Center, like this holistic approach, right? But you're coming up, you're dealing with people who've come out of a lot of colonization, trauma, disparities. So it's a lot of work.
That's right. Yeah, it is a lot of work, you know, because a lot of our generation of Native American healers, we also had to do a lot of work in becoming competent enough to work in this field. As a lot of people know that are working in recovery, you know, we have to manage our own personal needs, our own personal experiences. And so a lot of that mental health had to happen before I could step into the professional world. And so it also takes a lot of education and a lot of support. And I think that a lot of our workers in this area are dedicated to changing, you know, the trajectory for a lot of our tribes. So, it is. Four Corners is truly a gem in this area. It's been generations since we've had a highly effective, stable organization that has been able to address a lot of these complex issues in alcoholism.
I do have a link to Four Corners at KUNM.org. We also have links from Ted's articles to impacts on health and services that you can find. There are also studies ongoing at UNM you can enroll in. So you can check that out at KUNM.org. We do have another caller, Larry from Placitas. Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. Larry, what did you want to talk about?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, what a wonderful program. It would be so helpful to so many people. I want to thank you.
Well, thank you, Larry. Appreciate it.
I love these local programs about our community, the whole state, and Albuquerque, and problems that affect all of us.
Sure.
In 1995, I had my last drunk and woke up the next morning and collapsed with my face and my food. And I just had this revelation that I couldn't drink anymore. I've been drinking for decades. And I knew that there was a local Alcoholics Anonymous meeting here, excuse me, where I live. So I went there, and I've been going to Alcoholics Anonymous now for 22 years. So it's been a boon. And not only that, more and more meetings. In fact, I was involved in getting new meetings started in Bernalillo at one point. And there are hundreds of meetings available that are open and free to people with a problem with alcohol. So I am so thankful for that organization.
Thank you so much, Larry. We really appreciate you sharing your story. I'm going to move on to another caller so we can hear from as many people as possible. We have Jeff from Tijeras. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
What did you want to say on Let's Talk New Mexico?
Well, I too sobered up with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I feel that it's by far the best way to approach alcoholism. I've been sober for almost 40 years, and I look back, and I too had a traumatic childhood. And when I first came to AA, I talked about I hated my dad. And they said, you need to forgive your dad. And I couldn't do it. He really treated me bad. And not too long ago, there's a Dr. Gabor Maté has written several books about alcoholism and drug addiction. And he, somebody mentioned not being able to forgive, and he said, you open your dad's box and there's his dad. Mm. And you open that box and there's his dad. In other words, it goes back forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me understand that that my dad had probably just as traumatic a childhood as I did, maybe worse. And it enabled me to forgive my dad, and it took a lot of pressure away from me. And in fact, I even pulled my dad's picture up where I could see it now, you know. And but I also look at alcoholism as the trigger that caused me to be able to completely change my life.
Well, I really appreciate you calling, Jeff, and congratulations on 40 plus years of sobriety. That's a huge achievement. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I want to jump to our last guest here as we talk about a lot of Ted's reporting focuses on not only the problem, but possible solutions and the roadblocks. And we have Shelley Manlev. She's a public health consultant who previously worked as part of a coalition to raise taxes on alcohol. That effort was not successful. Shelley, what were the biggest roadblocks you found in trying to get something like this passed? You don't have to name names, but do you have an inkling whether a portion of lawmakers are using or abusing alcohol?
You know, no population, as we said earlier, is exempt from alcohol in New Mexico or any place. First of all, thank you so much, Ted. Incredible, incredible piece of reporting. Thank you to my other colleagues. I feel honored. And Megan, for focusing on this issue, because the focus on this issue is what's going to start the healing. What we can see, what's visible, is what we can do something about. And here, you know, New Mexico is not alone in our turning away for issues of stigma. Part of the disorder is denial, right? Everything's okay. I'm okay. That's you know, actually part of the process. So we have, you know, our lawmakers. I would stand in hearings. What a struggle. We would stand in hearings. There's tremendous money in this industry, and a lot of that money is spent on lobbying. When you go to hearings, you will experience yourself. You know, here I am, a prevention public health person. I have to say, not highly trained as a lobbyist. You know, it's a skill that I've not only personally cultivated, but also been passionately involved in training other people to do. But it's uncomfortable, conflict, you know, people who know things that you don't know. And our lawmakers, unfortunately, have many, many people, most of whom are paid for, either make their money or paid for by the alcohol industry, making a lot more money than you and I do, who are there to protect their profit. And profit is a very big driver. Obviously, profit requires, you know, there's the supply and the demand. And the fact that many people, not all people, almost close to half people don't drink at all. It's very interesting. We mm-hmm. don't know that, right? What we know and what we see is the ads, the saturation, both in terms of places to buy alcohol and places to consume it.
I wanted to mention, Rachel made a good point in our chat here, that it's important, given some of the stories we heard, that also alcohol use disorder can affect people with minimal adverse childhood experiences. I want to reiterate that, which we started the show with. This is a spectrum, right? And it's not just damaged or broken people who have problems with alcohol. Thank you for saying that, Rachel. Sorry, Shelley, but I mean, it gets to the larger point here. We need to talk about this differently and destigmatize it. And that's how change can happen. But change was difficult. Is the legality of alcohol part of the challenge for battling its negative effects compared to, you know, say, opioids or fentanyl? I mean, not that we're saying we have to make it illegal, but...
We are not prohibitionists. I think it's really important. As soon as you start to advocate for stronger enforcement of retail laws against sales to intoxicated people or minors, as soon as you start to advocate for raising alcohol prices, you get called a prohibitionist. Absolutely not prohibitionist. We know prohibition, I'm going to say it doesn't work. Surprisingly, actually, just to say, prohibition did reduce alcohol-related health issues, but it caused many, many other harms. It's not the approach that I would recommend or advocates in the field would recommend. We need to address a wide range, that comprehensive strategy, you know, starting with prevention through treatment, and then those conditions, both that, you know, poverty that address those environmental conditions that lead to increased adverse childhood effects, but also the conditions that make it easy to overconsume alcohol and consume in a way that's going to harm us.
Ted, yes, we're coming to the end, so I wanted to jump to you.
Yeah, and you know, to follow Shelley's point, in the series, I really deeply looked back at their campaign to try and raise alcohol taxes in the state, and they were trying to raise the taxes by a quarter a standard drink. You know, this is not a catastrophic increase in prices. It's a marginal one. And frankly, the consequences that the economists projected it would have were marginal. It probably wouldn't even be enough alone to bend the curve, the increase in alcohol-related deaths that we have in this state. But it would save lives and it would prevent thousands, if not tens of thousands, of people from developing alcohol use disorders. And that's, I think, why they were so adamant in pushing for it. And to the point about... the interests opposed to this, I guess I would say, you know, in my reporting, I spoke with a lot of people in the alcohol business. And I think it's an unfortunate tendency in our politics to polarize people.
Mm-hmm.
But liquor store owners, bar owners that I spoke with, they said they would never want to sell a drink if they knew it was going to cause harm to that person or the people's family around them. And I think there's a lot of goodwill in that industry, and finding a common cause to making a safer drinking environment is you know, something I'm optimistic we can achieve in New Mexico.
We have unfortunately reached the end of the hour, but thanks to everyone who called in or tweeted to us, and a big thank to our guests, Ted Alcorn, Rachel Morgan, Larissa Lindsay, Shelley Manlev. Again, find a link to all of Ted's stories at KUNM.org, as well as a list of resources and links to where our guests are located. Please keep sharing your thoughts with us on Twitter, hashtag Let's Talk NM, on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or email us, letstalk@KUNM.org. If you missed part of the show, we'll have audio up on our website soon. You can also subscribe to the Let's Talk New Mexico podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Yes, Ted?
And just one last thing. Yeah. People who are interested in speaking as part of, you know, to share their story who didn't today, we are collecting.
There's a link also. You can share your stories with New Mexico in depth. Thank you for that. That's at KUNM.org. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Jeanette DeDios handled our phones today. Taylor Velasquez live tweeted for us. Kaveh Movahead produced the show. Thank you all.